Welcome to the Binge Eating to Food Freedom podcast with Katie Papo. Our mission is to share the simplest and most peaceful system for food freedom in the world with people who suffer from binge eating, food addiction, and compulsive overeating. We're here to show that with the right strategy and support, any committed, coachable, and resourceful individual can feel peaceful and free with food. Good morning, or whatever time of day it is for you. Good day, and welcome to another episode of the Binge Eating to Food Freedom podcast. I am Katie Papo, and with me is Shahar, our amazing and wonderful mindset coach, and my personal mindset coach as well. My God, you guys, the benefits I get from living with a mindset coach, I will tell you. So today we're diving into a really important topic called emotional eating. So we're going to basically go into emotional eating 101 today. And I really wish that I had this sort of information when I first started my food journey. So we're going to be as comprehensive as possible in terms of helping you understand really the reasons why you emotionally overeat, why it feels difficult to stop, and how to really work with yourself instead of against yourself to shift and heal this area of your life. So let's dive in. First of all, let us know you're here. Send us some comments, say hello, send us some smiles and waves and hearts. We love to see those. Or we'll just keep looking at ourselves, and that's fine too. So let me just start this topic by saying a little bit about my journey with emotional eating. And in order to talk about my journey with emotional eating, I need to talk about my journey with emotions. And Shahar knows probably better than most people on this world how my emotional intelligence has changed ever since starting to fix my relationship with food. What I discovered for myself is that I actually had a pretty poor relationship with my emotions. And maybe some of you guys can relate to this, but for most of my life, I saw emotions as being something, as being things that got in the way of me living my life. I always viewed them as obstacles and distractions rather than things that should be paid attention to. So whenever I would notice myself feeling emotions, what I would do is I would just focus in completely on what I was doing, ignore the emotions completely, and then just move forward with my own sheer force of will. And this worked to a point. It worked in that, and I think a lot of people will be able to relate to this, it worked in that I was able to get things accomplished, right? And I didn't necessarily get sidetracked by emotions, but the long-term consequences of that ended up being problematic for me. And I see this with a lot of other people who tend to be more type A personalities. Maybe that's you. Maybe you're an ambitious person and things like emotions just kind of slow you down. Who's got time for that? So whenever emotional stuff comes up, it's more about like, all right, well, how do I just problem solve my way out of this and think my way through it? And then the emotion should be over, correct? Correct. Okay, let's move on and get back to the point. Like, this is a lot of how this personality tends to think, is that emotions are just an inconvenience. They're not really important and we need to just ignore them so we can get on with our goals. So if that's you, let us know that's you. Someone just commented, this is my first live, so I hope I'm commenting in the right place. Yes, you are. Thank you so much for being here. We can't see your name. We just see it as Facebook user, but you can still send in all of your comments or let us know who you are. So Shahar, let's talk about emotional eating and let's start from the ground up. Let's actually go beneath the surface here before we even hit ground level. Let's go underneath and let's talk about at its core what emotional eating really is and how we need to shift, and that this will allow us to see how we need to shift from getting into that place of, oh, emotions are just something that's standing in my way, I need to distract myself from these emotions in order to succeed, or ignore them in order to succeed, and I just lost my train of thought. Today's been one of those mornings where my brain is moving through my mouth and I can't seem to keep up with myself. So I'm sorry if this is one of the more rambly lives. Hopefully I'll be able to pull it together. So Shahar, jump on in and save me and help me introduce this topic.
That's what I like to call when your brain moves so fast, it starts working slow again. And this is actually a pretty good segue to what we're talking about because you mentioned something about like how you use willpower and you say like it worked, it served me this far. But this is something that's very important. When we force our way through, if we force our way through life or force our way through our day to day, yes, you have that sensation of something that works, but understand it works the same a train that runs on two people, or like a car that two people go like this works. It moves, but it's not even close as efficient as when you work with your energy and you're working with your emotions and you have that healthy relationship with them, then it starts moving like a bullet train. Right, that's the difference. It works. It gets you from point A to point B, and it can be very far if you have that willpower. But at some point, you keep pushing. At some point, it's gonna take its toll.
Right.
So understand that it's not about whether willpower works or not. It's about how effective you can be and how you can work with your own emotions rather than constantly working against them. So like Katie said, and sorry, that was a bit of a tangent, but let's go with definitions, right? So let's start first of all, where we're talking about, so emotional eating. So emotional eating, it's basically the way we see it. And there's many definitions, right? There's no one definition where one person defines it. And even that definition, if you look at I kind of like looked it up more, and I saw, even if you see like the what's called the definition is the most vague thing you've ever seen. However, when we talk about emotional eating, or the way we perceive it, is when we are overwhelmed from an emotion standpoint, or we have an inherent need or a habit, when we experience a high volume of emotions, when we need to shut it down, when we want to cover it up, like when you sweep something under a rug. And we do it through eating. So the emotions are so intense, and the eating is what gives you that comfort. It's an interesting level of comfort, because that comfort is numbness. It's not a comfort of, oh, I feel confident. It's not a comfort of compassionate. It's not comfort of peace, but it's comfort of numbing and non-feeling. And this is something I've been working with Katie, and I saw Katie's journey from an emotional eater and a binge eater, and even your own personal journey with your own emotions. Katie, I've seen you progress through that, and I'm sure a lot of the people who are listening to us can really resonate with your own personal experience and how you lived with emotional eating and how the journey you went through, if that makes sense. You're muted.
There we go. I'm on a roll today. So here's how that looks, guys. And we have to do a little bit of a comparison here. Because I'll share my personal experience. Maybe you can relate, but basically start thinking to yourself, what version of this story is your truth, is your experience? So for me, My issues with food actually started as more emotional. They started more, I used food as a tool for coping. This was even before I started doing things like dieting or weighing myself. I found myself turning to food for comfort to achieve that state that Shahar described as the numbed out state. Now, one of the things that I've noticed, and I did the same exact thing, is if you were to Google right now how to stop emotional eating, you're going to get lists and lists and lists of things that say, oh, well, if you're emotionally eating, then that means that there's some kind of need there that needs to be filled. So start to do something else that's going to help you cope without the food. So go for a walk, take a bath, call a loved one, And we've heard, and you know, these were things that I was trying. I was Googling all these. In fact, I was teaching workshops on this stuff. My God, I'm so, I can't believe I was teaching that. But the thing is this, it sounds like good knowledge. It sounds like, oh, well, if you're emotional and you want to eat, you emotional eating is bad, quote unquote bad, right? So if I don't want to emotionally eat, then I need to distract myself from that urge. I need to take that walk. I need to go for that walk. I need to take that bath. I need to journal. And it's not that there's anything inherently bad about any of those suggestions. They're all great suggestions for things to do to practice self-care, right? They're valid. However, the way that we're using them is totally misinformed, because what ends up happening is, right, we have the emotion, right? Whether we're happy, sad, depressed, anxious, you name it, angry, we have the emotion. And then we're like, oh, I don't like the feeling, whatever the feeling is, blah, I don't like it. Okay, let me distract myself. Oh, crap, I want to eat. Oh, no, got to distract myself from wanting to eat. Okay, what do I do? Take a walk. All right, I'm going to go take a walk. Go take a walk. Oh, I'm feeling much better. I'm feeling much better. Get back home. Now I want to eat. It's not gone. Oh no. Better call a friend. Oh no. Better take a bath. Oh no. It's now 9 p.m. and I'm starting my binge. And this was what it would look like for me. So it would basically like be like this postponing of the inevitable. I can distract myself, but eventually that urge, when I'm quieter still enough, it's going to surface back up. So I keep going to these distractions again and again and again. Now, what's the irony here is that the emotions, right? The emotions that are coming up, the problem isn't the emotional eating. The problem is how we're dealing with our emotions, period. The eating itself is the distraction from the emotions. So if we're trying to distract ourselves from the eating, what we're essentially doing is distracting ourselves from the distraction, which is only creating even more layers of distance in between ourselves and our feelings. Right? Does that make sense? It's important to understand that the eating is already the distraction from the emotions. So if you're trying to distract yourself from your distraction, you're not coming closer to peace. You're moving further away from it. You're creating more layers of distance. You're creating more numbing. You're creating more disconnect. This is something I had no idea I was even doing. I would think to myself, oh, well, I wanted to binge and I went out for a walk. That's me practicing self-care. And in some contexts, that could be, right? If that's what I really needed. But if I'm using it as, oh, hey, Debbie, nice to see you here. But if I'm using it as a tool to only distance myself further from my emotions, I'm not getting anywhere closer to peace or healing. I'm just basically stuffing down the symptoms. And that's what we do with food, right? When we eat, especially binge, think about if I'm feeling angry or sad or depressed or insert negative emotion here. If I'm feeling one of those things and then I start eating, now I'm not focused on my emotion anymore. I'm focused on food. And not only that, but I'm focused on all of these other dramatic thoughts around food. Oh, I shouldn't be eating this. Ooh, this is so unhealthy for me. Ooh, well, I'll just have it today. Oh, and if I eat the whole thing now, then it won't be in the house tomorrow and I won't be tempted. So let me eat the whole thing today. Oh, but this is too much sweet. I need salty to balance it out. And the cycle continues. And then it turns into, oh my God, I can't believe I just ate all of that. Da 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 da. I'm in so much pain. I can't even stand up. Now I have to go to bed like this. I'm going to be so sick when I wake up in the morning. I'm going to feel so bloated. Now notice how nowhere in that process, did we ever come back and circle back to dealing with the feelings? Like, we completely distract ourselves with the drama of disordered eating to distract ourselves from our feelings. So if we're adding another layer of distraction on top of that by saying, oh, well, I'm trying not to eat, so let me just take a bath or call a friend or, you know, smell lavender or whatever thing that you've told yourself you need to do to calm down, what ends up happening is when you use it in that kind of mindset, you're just creating more distance between you and yourself. So what Chakra and I are always talking here about is how to work with yourself instead of against yourself. And this would be a prime example of how to work against yourself by not acknowledging the emotions or using the emotions as part of the healing process. Now, here comes the scary part, or this was the scary part that I thought of, right? In my own journey, I thought, well, I can't deal with emotions. Like if I deal with them, I'm just going to be consumed. I can't even handle other people's emotions, let alone my own. I'm super sensitive, very empathetic. I can feel everybody's feelings. So the last thing I want to spend my time doing is feeling more feelings, right? And not only that, but look at the ways that we've been taught how to deal with our feelings. What, do I have to go to therapy now and talk about all my childhood and figure out, oh, well, I had this emotion and that triggers this binge. And oh, that emotion came from this experience in my life and this relationship with my parents and this relationship with my whatever. And we think we have to deal with our emotions in this really intense, traumatic way in order to heal them. And what one of the things that I've noticed comes up in that is then we just end up analyzing even more, which is distancing ourselves from our emotions even more. Because when we're trying to, let me back up for a second and say one really important point. When we're trying to deal with our emotions from a place of logic, it becomes problematic. When we're dealing with emotions, we need to speak the language of emotions. So if I'm trying to, and I've done so much therapy that I want to just share this piece because I know a lot of you listening have also done tons of therapy on this and without success. So I want to piece this together. When we're, and this is not to say anything negative about therapy, there's many positive uses for it. But when we use it in this way, by, for example, trying to figure out, I'm putting air quotes, I need to figure out what's wrong with me. And once I figure out why I binge, once I figure out why I emotionally eat, then I'll be able to fix it. Now, the problem with that line of thinking, even though it's totally logical line of thinking, the problem is that now I'm trying to think my way through emotional healing. And emotional healing is not an analytical process. So even if you figure out, oh, well, my emotional eating stems from my mom because I would see my mom do that when I was little, and these are the, and it was imprinted into my subconscious mind and I pulled on these habits. Okay, great. I know all of that. Now what do I do? Because the urge to binge is still there. And I can tell myself again and again, hey, this isn't really you. This is just a pattern that you got from your family. And this is just a pattern that you took on and da 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 da. It's not real. And I can say all those things. And I can try to convince myself logically that the emotion isn't quote unquote valid. But I'm still left feeling that emotion and I still want to binge. So what the heck? So now we have to look at how can I speak the language of emotion. So I'm not just trying to think my way through this healing process. Because if we're trying to think our way through feeling, we're missing the point of feeling. Feeling and thinking are two different things. They're both useful in their own right. But in this case, thinking is totally unhelpful. And it's comforting when we can think and try to figure things out because we feel like we're making progress when we have these epiphanies and things like that, like we get oftentimes in therapy and stuff like that. But if we don't have the feeling tools to go along with that, we're just stuck in a thought loop again and again. Well, if it wasn't my childhood trauma, then there must be another reason I'm still binging. I need to figure that out. And we end up in these cycles of trying to just figure out and analyze emotions. And that's not how we heal emotions. Guys, it took me so long I was Shahar's such a great mindset coach, but boy, was I stubborn. And this took me so long to internalize and accept that I cannot think my way out of feeling things. And those of you who are intellectual and you have strong minds and you're like, I'm a freaking genius in every other area of my life. So why is food, which is supposed to be a natural thing, why can't I fix this? The reason why you're so frustrated is because that's not the zone of genius you need for this. That zone of genius will serve you in every other area, not this one. You need to develop a new superpower called feeling. And I'm going to explain to you, because for me, this was the nightmare. The last thing I ever wanted to do was feel feelings, and I was terrified to do it. So that's what we want to talk about here as well, is how to feel feelings without being consumed by them, because that's the big fear. Well, if I feel my feelings, I'm just going to binge even more because, man, that's just going to open up the floodgates. So I feel like I should break up my own monologue here and allow Shahar to participate, since Shahar, my God, is the one who helped me literally do all this stuff. And then we'll go into strategy. So what do you have to say about it, Shahar?
Well, first of all, it was beautiful. I loved it. It was great. You coached me also at this point. But yeah, that was such good points. And I want to reinforce that by, think of it as if you remember our last podcast, I think last week or it was 2 weeks. No, last week was the breathing, but the week before that, we discussed about what kind of language our body, our emotions are, and what kind of language is our analytical brain. And like Katie said, it's two completely different languages. It's your mind speaks English and your body speaks Czechoslovakian. Like it's something that is not even close. You will hear a sound and you won't even understand what it is. Like one is Thai, one is one German. So it's important to understand that in order to communicate with our body, in order to get and understand these emotions, that they don't need to scream, right? If two people who don't really speak each other's language, and this is something I'm sure a lot of everybody who's listening to us definitely resonate, and Katie, I know you can resonate with that for sure from your own childhood, is when someone is yelling at you trying to make their point and you're not listening to them, and you're yelling back at them your point and they're not really getting your point, what those two people will start doing? They'll start elevating their voice. It becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. So if your body is sending you a message, i.e. your emotions, and you're not listening to those points and you're ignoring them, then what does the body does? Increase the level and intensity of the emotions. And if your mind, your analytical brain is trying to make a point and your body's not listening to it, because your body, you're saying to yourself, relax, don't be stressed, don't be this, and your body's not understanding it, so what does the mind does? It goes even more. It starts yelling even louder and louder and louder. So, and then you're in a situation where you have two voices, right? They're all you, but it's like two voices. Your brain is saying one thing, your body is saying another. Nobody is listening to each other, and they both keep intensifying their voice. So the way you solve it is communicate in each other's language. The body needs to learn English, the mind needs to learn Italian or whatever, Thai, whatever language, Spanish. The whole point is to bring each other to communicate on the same level. Notice I'm not even going more than that. We're starting first in the first stage, which is first communicate on the same level. Right, that's the point, and I'm sure Katie, you're going to talk about that now before I delve into that a little deeper. But just remember, it's about bringing the mind and the body to the same place that they can actually start communicating and listening and conversing and understanding each other.
Exactly. So Shahar talks about them being two different languages, and they are ultimately. So think of emotions as energy. And think of it, emotion. I saw this in a documentary. I didn't make this up. E dash motion, right? Energy in motion. So emotions, they're always shifting. They're always changing. Emotions, the only way that they can be stuck is when we repress them or we don't let them express themselves in some way. So emotions, their nature is to naturally change and flow all the time. So if you ever feel an emotion, right, it can't be permanent. It's not the nature of emotions. It will never be permanent. It cannot be. So what's important to understand is that emotions, if they're communicating as energy and emotions, the way we're going to use the right language to communicate is through feeling, through sensation. Now, this is very different than thinking. Right. And as someone who's used to thinking her way and problem solving her way out of anything, you know, that's pretty much from the neck up. Like if you're a big thinker and an analyzer, like sometimes you forget your body's even there. Like you basically are this floating head. Like I'm saying this because this is how I lived as a floating head for many years. And I would just float around thinking things through. And I was totally disconnected from any physical feelings at all. In fact, the number the better, because then the emotions wouldn't interfere with my thinking. Now, the problem with that is now I'm not speaking my emotions language at all. And while I think that the emotions will just take care of themselves, they're not. Instead, what's happening is repression. Okay. And when you repress, emotions cannot flow. And then when they do come out eventually, it's like an explosion. It's like a volcano. So of course, we don't want to let them out because I can't handle the explosion. So it's important to understand, though, before I get too much into strategy, I'm getting carried away today because I'm excited. What's important to understand is that you need to understand the sensations first. You need to learn how to communicate through sensation. Now, communicate is a two-way street, right? There's the talking, right? And there's the listening. Think of any relationship, talking, listening. So if Shahar and I are communicating, right? I'm not necessarily talking the whole time. There's going to be times where it's my job to listen. Now, when it comes to communicating with the body and with emotions, right? Your job is not to be the talker. Your job is to be the listener. Now, how do we actively listen if we're not using our minds? Okay. We practice feeling. Now, if you remember last week's talk, we talked first about breathing, right? And Dani, who showed up as our guest, she talked about all the different ways that our breath can serve as both a barometer and also a shifter. Now, when we use our breath as a barometer, it gives us some insight into our current state. So she gave an example of, I think it was feeling stressed, that when we're stressed, the breath is very short and shallow. It sounds like this, right? I'm emphasizing it a little bit, but you get the point. Now, I could just view my breath and see, okay, this is showing me that I'm in a stressed out state right now. My breath is reflecting that. It's my barometer. But I could also shift my state if I want to by slowing the breath down and activating the parasympathetic nervous system. If you haven't seen our talk, by the way, last week, watch it, because then this will make more sense to you. So if I were to just change my breath, let's say just now, and I take myself out of the fight or flight, and so watch the shift or listen to the shift. That's my stressed out state. So what am I feeling? I'm feeling some tension in my chest. I'm feeling very shallow breath. What other physical sensations might I be feeling? I might have my hands clenched. I might have my shoulders up by my ears. I might have my face all scrunched up. I might have my jaw clenched. So I'm noticing the sensations, okay? Now, these sensations are important to notice. This is how emotions communicate, and this is how your body communicates, through physical feelings and physical sensations. So if I notice, okay, my shoulders are up, my abdomen is tense, my breath is really shallow, I can see where I'm at. Okay, my body is clearly in a stressed out state right now. Now, if I try to now think my way through this and I just say, Katie, just relax. Katie, you shouldn't feel this way. Everything in your life is going well, so just stop being stressed out, right? Logic, right? That is logic. It makes total sense. But is it really going to help me shift? If I say, Katie, what's wrong with you? Why do you keep feeling this way? You shouldn't feel bad. You should feel good. Look how good your life is. Stop being stressed. Relax. Breathe. If I just say those things, nothing shifts. But if I actually focus on the sensations and shifting the sensations, what might happen? So it might start like this. And I'm just going to narrate what I'm doing for those of you listening to the podcast who can't see me on video. So if I notice, okay, my shoulders are tense, I'm going to, relax the shoulders. And just that one action, just from going from here, shoulders up to the ears, and bringing them down the back, whatever emotions or tension that I'm storing in my shoulders, guess what I just released? I just released all the tension in the shoulders. Now I can take this further. If I tense my jaw, right? If I'm all tense and I'm tensing my jaw, I might pay attention to the jaw, close my eyes, tune in, feel the tension there, feel the sensation. And now I can just separate my back teeth a little bit. I can relax my tongue away from the roof of the mouth. And now my jaw is relaxed. And whatever tension or emotions were stored in my jaw, guess what? I just let them release. Now, if we do that part by part, or even with the breath alone, if I can go, if I'm going and I have all this tension, if I just slow down the breath, deeply inhale, and now long exhale, that long exhale, guess what's being released? All that tension, all that stuff. Now, in this process, am I releasing every emotion? No, but I'm not even dealing with thinking at this point. I've shifted from thinking to feeling, and now it's just about, where's the tension? Can I release it in any amount? And is there, and once that's done, is there anywhere else there's tension? Where can I release that? And in doing that, you start to shift your body from the panic state into a more relaxed state where you're actually releasing, because emotions, again, they're energy. So yes, they can be emotions and things that you think, right? But there, it's all going to be illustrated in your body. If you see a relaxed person who's holding clenched fists, you're not going to believe that that's a relaxed person, right? Because relaxed people don't look like that. Relaxed people don't have their face clenched with their fists clenched and their shoulders up by their ears, right? We can see how people are emotionally by looking at them. So anytime you're holding an emotional state, it will be reflected in your body. So the first thing you can do where you don't even need to think at all is just releasing the tension from the body, releasing the tension from the breath and softening all of those things. So that way, whatever is building up, you can just release it automatically right there. And the beauty of this first step of this process is, number one, you don't have to think. Number two, you don't have to dive into any bit of your childhood. What you're focused on is just releasing in the present moment. And you're not forcing it, because we're not forcing emotions out. The problem isn't that the emotions exist. The problem is that we're not relating to them intelligently. So we're not trying to get rid of them, but we are releasing and allowing ourselves to come into a state where we can release what's no longer needed there. So this is the first kind of stage. So Shahar, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I just wanted to add a little note there. And it really to strengthen what you said also, that it is that, like you said, because the emotions are stuck through the body, and I'm assuming that you're going to relate that to the emotional eating as well, but it's when your body in that state, this is the way you communicate. Now, something I want to reinforce is what it's going to look like. It's not going to be, I'm stress. Okay, relax. What's going to happen? It's going to be like this. It's going to come like a wave. You're going to be tense. Okay, breathe. Okay. Like, it's going to look like that. And then as you allow more time, okay, because when everybody is listening right now, when you try this yourself, that's what you're going to experience. In the beginning, you're going to go, okay, breathe. And then your mind is going to keep rushing ahead. But the point is, you keep bringing yourself back and communicating with the body instead of, again, jumping right in intellectual, because that's what we're used to. That's what's going to happen. I say, okay, relax the shoulder. Okay, this is not working. I'm not relaxed. Relax my face. That's what's going to happen. You remove the analytical and just be and focus on the breath and just, it's about listening. It's not about doing. You're not forcing yourself to relax. You just stop holding it. Right? That's the difference. It's a different type of energy. It's a different type of communication. It's a different type of lingo, right? If I'm holding on my phone right now and I'm squeezing it, right, in order to hold it, that's a type of active energy. That's the intellectual. That's the active. That's the one that holds on to things. That's the thoughts. That's the willpower. It holds on, but we'll get tired. The emotional and listening and observation is not keep holding. You can't say to yourself, okay, I'm going to release the phone, so I'm going to keep squeezing it. Release. It's not going to happen. What you do, you stop holding it to it. You just stop the pressure. And that's the when you close your eyes and just breathe. Okay, you saw that transition. It's just stop holding on to it. And at that point, you're communicating with your body. Not with language, not with thoughts, with sensation. Right. That makes sense?
Yeah. And what we've found, guys, is that emotional eaters will always heal best when they stop trying to distract themselves and instead learn to be more present and peaceful. And that's what that is. It's being peaceful with your emotion. It's letting the emotion be there. It's letting the discomfort be there, but being peaceful around it anyway. Like, I can be peaceful with the fact that I feel uncomfortable right now. Now, I can hear you saying, yeah, but I don't want to sit with my emotions. It's too overwhelming. What if it's too much? What if it takes over me? I hear that a lot. This is something I've struggled with myself. And the key is to really work with your emotions skillfully and not only in the heat of the moment, right? This is something you can do throughout your day. This is what we teach our clients to do. When they work with us, they're working with us because they want specific customized practices that they're doing that are going to relate to them and their situation specifically. Because when you have that and you work with your emotions skillfully, then you're not consumed by them because you're doing the practices throughout the day. So by the time heat of the moment situation comes up, you already have a baseline. Now, even if, let's say, worst case scenario, it's still a difficult thing, guess what? Then you just get to learn from the experience. We look forward to these sorts of things because this is where the most growth comes. Let's say you had a binge and you feel like defeated that it didn't work for you, right? Of course, that's going to happen. So in that situation, we take you through self-coaching where you learn from the experience and you work through a framework. Then what happens is you reestablish your practices that you're doing on the regular. That you're doing, and they're teeny tiny things. And I can't give you specifics right now because we do different for everyone, but they're teeny tiny things. And breathing would be an example of one of them where you're putting this in very specific strategic places so you can work with your emotions skillfully regularly. So that way it doesn't feel consuming because then you're not dealing with your whole childhood and your whole past and every emotion you've ever felt. It's not like opening up the floodgates. But instead, you just deal with the emotion that's present now. You feel it, you experience it, you release, you let it go on its own. And then if another one comes up, then you deal with that one. But it's teeny, teeny, tiny things. So that way it's not the floodgates opening. It's not that you have to deal with every negative emotion that you've ever felt in your life at once. Instead, you're dealing with teeny, teeny things bit by bit by bit and building that pattern in the body and brain. So that way it's easy to tap into next time. Now, here's where emotional eaters actually have a huge advantage over non-emotional eaters. and one of the things that I really like about the work that we do is that it helps you to work with yourself and not against yourself. Because I always thought that my addictive personality, my wanting to numb, like all of my, the fact that I feel so deeply and I can feel other people's feelings and I feel my own feelings and it's so intense and so strong. I always saw those as weaknesses or things that held me back. Now, if you relate to this and you're also somebody who feels deeply, and that's why you want to numb, because you don't want to feel people's crap all day and you don't want to have to deal with your emotions constantly because you've got stuff to do. Like this practice is so important, and it's important to understand what a advantage you have as somebody who struggles with emotional eating. Because the more you can understand, and we see this with our clients all the time, they have these things that they see as weaknesses, and we show you how to flip it around and use it as your strength. So in the case of emotional eating, if we're speaking generically here, in the case of emotional eating, you have a huge advantage over somebody who doesn't get the urge to emotionally eat. And the reason you have that advantage is because the moment that you feel yourself wanting to emotionally eat, right? When you know, like, yep, this is definitely not hunger. This is, I just want to eat because I want to eat. That's your signal that there's some need, that there's some emotion or some need that is not being met. And this is the body calling to you, right? So if we were to personify this, right? And let's say Shahar represents let's say Shahar represents the urges to eat emotionally, and I'm me. If I'm saying, if Shahar is coming up as this urge and he's saying, eat, eat, like just eat, you'll feel better. Just let it go. Just numb out, right? He's coming to me, right, as a messenger. Nothing negative, just a messenger. Now, if I understand that this is a signal, that that Shahar represents my body and this is a signal, then this is not something I want to ignore or something to distract myself from. That's basically like him saying, hey, listen to me, and me going, yeah, I'm just going to go on a walk though. Or yeah, I'm just going to call a friend though while you're talking to me. Or yeah, I'm just going to eat though and not pay attention to you at all. That's the equivalent of the numbing and the distractions. But if I were to listen and say, oh, okay, so there's some need that isn't being met, then that gives, that's our cue. That's our cue to pause. That's our cue to go within, right? To center ourselves, to focus ourselves, and to actually look at, okay, what is my need right now? Or what is my emotion right now? I found here's a exercise you can literally do today. The next time you feel any emotional sensations at all, like, oh, I'm just feeling emotion, or I'm feeling guilt, or I'm feeling shame, or basically anytime you're feeling bad, you can do it when you're feeling good or bad, but try it when you're feeling bad, because that's kind of what we're talking about here. But the next time you feel negative or you feel bad in some way, just practice labeling the emotion, not trying to change it, not trying to move it, not trying to shift it, just practice labeling it. So it might look like this: guilt, shame, fear, worry, anxiety. Maybe there's also some excitement in there. Maybe there's also some gratitude in there. Maybe there's some positive emotions too. But I'm just labeling all of the emotions that I'm feeling right now. And opposite emotions can exist at the same time. I can feel in doubt and I can also feel trust at the same time, but to different degrees. So there's no limits to how many emotions you can feel or what combinations of emotions are possible. The idea is literally just to, without judgment, label your emotions. Just say them out loud. Just label them. Guilt, shame. Don't do anything else. Just practice labeling them, because that practice on its own is going to help you give attention to the emotion itself. And that's what we need to start building, is the practice of giving attention to the emotion. Then you might be able to say, okay, where is it? Where do I feel it? Where do I feel the most tension right now? Oh, maybe it's in my chest. Oh, maybe it's in my shoulders. Then at a certain point, and by the way, you know, every experience will be different, but the bottom line is to understand the process, of accepting what's there, allowing it to be there, creating peace around it so you're not adding drama or suffering to the already negative emotion, and then allowing it to work itself out while you're just present for that. So you're not in problem solving mode, you're in acceptance mode. And I can hear the question, well, if I just accept negative emotions, then I'm just going to feel negative all the time. It's not true. It's just not true. Because the reason why these negative emotions are coming up, first of all, it's just part of life, right? If we're trying to live in a constant state of happiness, we're never going to reach it, because states are constantly shifting. So if you know that your emotions and your state is going to shift for the rest of your life, your job is not to try to control that and try to be happy forever or try to never emotionally eat, right? That's not the job. The job is to create a healthy relationship with your emotions, right? And if you have emotional urges to eat, that's a huge advantage for you. Because then the moment you feel yourself wanting to emotionally eat, that's your sign. That's your signal. You have a need that is not being met. And when you experience that urge to eat emotionally, you can use that signal to your advantage and start giving yourself what you need in that moment. So in that sense, your emotions start to work for you, not against you. And when you treat them as messengers rather than enemies, you get to learn what you really need to feel content and satisfied. And at that point, food is not relevant anymore. Your needs are met. And this is the thing about emotional eating. When we focus on the food and the food itself, we're totally missing the point. Because this is not even a relationship between you and the food. Food's just the coping mechanism. And if you take away the food, guess what? There's going to be a new coping mechanism right in its place. But that still doesn't mean you're dealing with the emotions, right? I replace cigarettes with food, and food with cigarettes, and cigarettes with food, and food with cigarettes. Like, how many times has that happened? Where we take one habit and replace it with something else. Oh, I stopped drinking. Now I start eating. I'm no longer an alcoholic, but now I'm a binge eater. Right. So if you've gone through these patterns of replacing habit with habit, but never actually dealing with the thing that you're trying to cope with all along, right? Then we stay stuck and all the emotions stay stuck too. So the purpose of this talk is to really show you how you can truly use your emotions as your strength, something to help you work with yourself instead of against yourself. So that way you're going to heal your best when you stop trying to distract yourself and instead you become more present, more peaceful with your emotions. Anything to add, Shahar?
No, I unmute myself. So everything you said is perfect. It really shows us that not only we have no reason to fear our emotions, it is our duty to understand them, right? Because they are part of us and they're not there as villains. They're there as, like Katie said, messengers. And it is your body trying to communicate with you something, right? It has its purpose. These emotions have its purpose. And I know sometimes we wish we didn't have emotions and we don't feel them, but honestly, not feeling emotions, that's the binge eating, right? So if it was so good not to feel, then nobody who's listening to us would be here. So obviously the numbing of ourselves and the numbing of our sensations and the numbing of our own humanity, right? Emotions is part of your humanity. It obviously does not create a positive result. So we need to understand our emotions to these level and understand what they are and treat them for what they are. They are a communication tool that your body is listening. So I want to encourage everybody who is listening to us, allow yourself not to think about your emotions, but to allow yourself to experience them and at the same time, settle yourself into that state, because it's not just living in stress. That's not what we're talking about, because the more you try to push something away, the stronger it's your connection to it. It is by allowing yourself to, right? If I feel the tense thing and I just breathe, all right, I'm not saying to myself, relax. I'm just creating a sensation of relaxation. Basically, I'm communicating to the body, slow down. And this is something that me and Katie, for example, we like to do when we are closer to the evening of the or closer to the night and we know we want to sleep. We start closing the lights, lowering the things, shutting down a different thing. We start slowly building ourselves towards sleep. And that makes the sleep much more powerful, right? Because we are sending a message to our body of slow down. And we're not intellectually saying to ourselves, sleep. That never works. All my time when I was in the army, when you yell at yourself to sleep, for some reason, just does not work. It is allowing yourself to be in a calm state. It's allowing yourself. It's, again, I'm using the word allowing because it's not forcing. It's allowing means stop holding onto it. So stop pushing away the emotions and allow them to be experienced. And when they experience, all right, that tension will go. Think about like a pipe, or not like a pipe, like a hose, right? When you're kind of, twist it, right? And you create this energetic flow interruption, it's gonna feel very tense. And you say, yeah, but if I'm gonna release it, it's gonna explode. Well, it's gonna explode if you don't release it. Right. This is, and then you release, it has that little burst, then it settles back to the natural flow. That's what's going to happen, right? You're going to allow yourself to experience. It's going to be a big boom. And then you sit and keep bringing yourself back and it's going to start settling back into its natural flow. And like I said, it's going to be a back and forth. You're going to tense it up again. It's going to release again, then back to the flow. Tense it up, release, back to the flow. So that's the experience of the breathing. That's the experience of what we teach. That's the practice.
And what we know everybody here wants, we know what you want. You want to feel good, ultimately. You want to feel good in your body. You want to feel peaceful in your own mind. And that's it, right? Isn't that the goal? Those two things, to feel good in your body and to feel peaceful in your mind. So what we see a lot of people doing is they'll employ these like warlike mentalities and these warlike tactics when the end goal is to feel good. How can we feel peaceful if our main tactic is war? If you're practicing war over and over by trying to fight yourself, when does the peace come in? In order to get your mind peaceful, you need to practice peace. And by practice peace, I mean show the body what that feels like. Because you can say over and over in your head, be peaceful, I am peaceful, affirmations, I am peaceful, I am peaceful, I am peaceful. But if your body doesn't know what that feels like, it will not have the experience and you will not be able to make that your livable home, right? This is about creating a mind and a body that you feel at home in, because these are the only two you've got for life. You've got this mind, you've got this body, that's it, right? So we have to work with what we have and not fight ourselves. So if we want to end up with a peaceful outcome, our methods must also be peaceful, which means not fighting emotions, means not repressing, means not ignoring. It means listening and being a strong, compassionate listener. And how do we listen? Through feeling. Through feeling. The body is much, much smarter than your mind. But the mind, because it's used to being the more active piece, is going to try to distract you from this. It'll do it today. Like you'll try to practice this today. It'll do it. You'll see. This is why people work with us, because they're like, what the hell? I need like something specific for me here. So, but I'm telling you, the reason why I'm telling you that will happen is to know that that's normal. And that's natural for when you're practicing this. It's normal for you to have that experience. But at the same time, the body still needs to have the peaceful experience. It's so much smarter than the mind, and it will take care of everything. It really does. It's amazing how it happens, but it really does. But the mind is still gonna wanna be dominant because it's so used to analyzing and problem solving. Oh, if I could just figure out this one piece, then all of this will be fixed. If I could just figure out why, right? How many times have you said that to yourself? If I could just figure out why. Figuring out why, even if you do figure out why, that will still not change anything. It might change your understanding, but the habits won't change at all because your body has not learned how to be peaceful. Your body has not learned how to feel safe. Your body has not learned how to feel calm. We need to train the body. And then the more the body relaxes, the more the mind follows. They're very close. They're an old married couple, the body and brain. When you start to change one, the other follows. Now, because the mind is such a sticky point here, we want to make the point of entry the body. So we calm the body. We allow ourselves to deal with the emotions through physical sensations instead of by trying to rationalize them or make logic out of them. Emotions aren't logical. In case you didn't know, I learned that pretty late. So just letting you know that emotions won't be logical, even if you want them to be. And then what happens is eventually, and actually pretty soon, you'll start to find that once the body settles and the body gets to know, oh, this is what peace feels like. Oh, this is what it feels like to just let a feeling go. Oh, this is what it feels like to just experience a feeling. And then, wow, I'm alive after. Wow, I lived through that experience. Wow, that wasn't so hard. Mm-hmm. Then the body starts to not take these emotions so seriously anymore. The mind also starts to not take the emotions so seriously. And then because we don't feel this desperate need to stuff our emotions down because we're not afraid of them anymore. Does emotional eating even come up? Not anymore. That's the thing. If you guys notice that it's in this entire talk about emotional eating, we've barely talked about food. Why? Because food has nothing to do with this. It has literally nothing to do with this. It's just the object that you're using to cope. When you don't need to cope with emotions anymore because you're able to just experience them peacefully, the need for emotional eating completely disappears. You don't use it anymore. You don't need it anymore. And that's the thing. It's because a lot of people, they'll just try to take away the eating. They'll say, oh, well, I need to just stop eating and then figure it out. Your mind is and your body are both way too smart for that. They're both like, no, no, no. I am not letting go of this coping tool until I feel safe. So even if we do go on that walk instead of eating, that craving is coming back as soon as I'm back from my walk. Because I still need to stuff this down because I don't feel safe. But once you do feel safe and you feel safe with your emotions, you're not afraid of them anymore. You're not desperately trying to stuff them down. You're allowing them to move freely, and you're moving throughout these different states and phases of life more peacefully, allowing emotions to come and go. There's no more need for emotional eating. It just does not come up. So it's important to understand that. Because a lot of people will try to attack this from the point of the food. And they'll say, oh, well, if you're struggling with emotional eating, well, definitely eat these lower calorie foods, because then you can eat more of them and it's fewer calories. Or at least try to have only this snack after 7 p.m. or drink water. And it's completely ignoring the fact that we still don't know how to deal with our emotions. So instead of attacking this from the food angle, instead of attacking it at all, we're promoting peace here, not war. instead of attacking it, right, or running away from it, instead we're opening up to it and we're listening and we're being peaceful and we're showing our body what it feels like to be peaceful, to be able to deal with emotions peacefully. And once that trust is built, once you've done that a number of times and that trust is built of, oh, I can experience my emotions peacefully. There's nothing really to be afraid of. This was like a classic monster under the bed situation. There was nothing really there. I was just afraid of it because I watched that scary movie, right? Then you realize all these fears, they don't exist anymore. And then the need for emotional eating also disappears. So how's that for emotional eating 101?
Beautiful, beautiful.
Anything to add, Shahar?
No, I think this is perfect. And for everyone who is listening, give it a go. Give it a try. Try swimming with the river instead of against it. Once, see what happens.
Yeah, you won't even have to swim. You could even just float. Just float.
Float through your emotions.
Float down the river. As long as you choose the right river, you'll float to the right end. So let's close out this talk. First of all, remember that we have these talks every single week, new topics, and sometimes we cover the same topics, but we just do it from a different angle or with new analogies, because the point is, guys, the themes are going to repeat themselves. And the more you listen, right, to our podcast or to the videos or read my emails that I send out, the more you repeat these concepts, the more the brain starts to get it. Repetition is key in making these sorts of changes you want to make. The more you repeat, the better. And if you're somebody who's like, hey, this all sounds great, I just don't want to have to figure this out myself, I would rather you get to know me and you give me the practices that are going to work for me, and all I have to do is show up and do the work, and then you're going to help me work my way through and send me the feedback on all of my own reflections so you can see the invisible things that I'm not seeing. If that's what you want, that's what our program is for. We have a 10-week private immersion. We work with very few people at a time, because one of the things that we do, and one of the things that we're really good at, because we've done this for so long and with so many people, and the fact that I've done this myself, I think really, you know, it's very easy for me to see these invisible patterns at this point. So if you're having trouble and you're like, ooh, I just don't know where I'm stuck, or I have these patterns, and what we found actually when we work with people is a lot of times they're like, I didn't even know that I didn't know that. I didn't even know what I didn't know, because when we're in our own jar, we cannot see the label on the outside of the jar. And sometimes even just having someone to be like, oh, you didn't notice this invisible thing? Oh my God, that was the missing piece. That could save me 10 years. You know, that's how it works. Like, these little invisible things that you don't even know are coming up. When you can have someone, whether it's us or somebody else in your life, who can point these things out to you and give you the steps to course correct, it's invaluable. So if you don't have that person, or you want to, or if you feel like we could be those people for you, feel free to reach out, see if our program's for you. And with that, I think we'll sign off now. Stay tuned for next week when we'll be back on another live on Thursday. We upload these talks to our podcast. We upload them to my Facebook page. If you're not on our email list, go ahead and join that, because I've been sending out writings at least once or twice a week these days. So get on it, guys, because this is totally doable. You have every single tool that you need within you already. You have all of it. Now it's just a matter of making sense of it, practicing, and then just making the progress, making the steps, and enjoying the ride and enjoying your healing. So anyone can do this. We know this to be true. So keep on keeping on. We love to hear from you guys. Feel free to reach out. Let us know your successes. And we'll talk to you all soon. All right.
Have a great day. Thanks to Karina. Exactly.
Karina, for all of your participation.
I loved your energy. Right?
Yes, we feel the love, and we're sending right back to you. All right. Nice to see you too, Susan. Love listening to you. Thank you so much. We're always happy to see you when you come on and listen and participate. So thank you so much, guys. And we'll see you next week. Bye.